Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 3rd chapter, text 46. Shri Suguvacha Iti Upt Vasid Daristushnim Iti Upt Vasid Daristushnim Bhagavan Atmamayaya Bhagavan Atmamayaya Pitro Sampashyato Sajyo Pitro Sampashyato Sadyo Babuva Prakrita Sishu Babuva Prakrita Sishu Shri Suguvacha Iti Upt Vasidaristushnim Bhagavan Atmamayaya Pitro Sampashyato Sadyo Babuva Prakrita Sishu. Others. Vaishnavis. Shri Sukuvacha, Shri Sukadev Goswami said, Iti Uktva, after instructing in this way, Asit, remain, Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Tusnim, silent, Bhagavan, Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Atmamayaya, By acting in his own spiritual energy.
Pitro
sampasyato. While his father and mother were factually seeing him. Sadhya. Immediately. Babuva. He became. Prakrita. Like an ordinary human being. Sisu. A child. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Sukadeva Goswami said, after thus instructing his father and mother, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, remained silent. In their presence, by his internal energy, he then transformed himself into a small human child. In other words, he transformed himself into his original form, Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 6, Sambhavami Atmamaya, whatever is done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is done by his spiritual energy. Nothing is forced upon him by the material energy. This is the difference between the Lord and an ordinary living entity. The Vedas say, Parasya Shaktir Vidhaiva Shriyate, Svabhavika Gyanam Balakuryacha, Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.8. It is natural for the Lord to be untinged by material qualities. And because everything is perfectly present in his spiritual energy, as soon as he desires something, it is immediately done. The Lord is not a prakrita sisu, a child of this world, but by his personal energy he appeared like one. Ordinary people may have difficulty accepting the Supreme Controller, God, as a human being because they forget that he can do everything by his spiritual energy, Atmamaya. Non-believers say, how can the Supreme Controller descend as an ordinary being? This sort of thinking is materialistic. Srila Jiva Goswami says that unless we accept the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as inconceivable, beyond the conception of our words and mind, we cannot understand the Supreme Lord. Those who doubt that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can come as a human being and turn himself into a human child are fools who think that Krishna's body is material, that he is born, and that he therefore also dies. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, 4th Chapter, verses 28 and 29, there is a description of Krishna's leaving his body. Maharaj Prakrit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, when all the members of the Yadu dynasty met their end, Krishna also put an end to himself. And the only member of the family who remained alive was Uddhava. How was this possible? Sukadeva Goswami answered that Krishna, by his own energy, destroyed the entire family and then thought of making his own body disappear. In this connection, Sukadeva Goswami described how the Lord gave up his body. But this was not the destruction of Krishna's body. Rather, it was the disappearance of the Supreme Lord by his personal energy. Actually, the Lord does not give up his body, which is eternal, but as he can change his body from the form of Vishnu to that of an ordinary human child, let me read that again. Actually, the Lord does not give up his body, which is eternal, but as he can change his body from the form of Vishnu to that of an ordinary human child. Okay. He can change... Oh, it's comma. Sorry. I'm seeing a period, and that's why it's a comma. He can change his body to any form he likes. This does not mean that he gives up his body. By spiritual energy, the Lord can appear in a body made of wood or stone. He can change his body into anything because everything is his energy. Parashya Shaktir Vavidhaiva Shriyate. As clearly said in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 4, Bina Prakriti Astada, the material elements are separated energies of the Supreme Lord. If he transforms himself into the Archamurti, the worshipable deity, which we see as stone or wood, he is still Krishna. Therefore, the Shastra warns, Arche Vishnu Shiladir Gurushu Naramati. One who thinks that the worshipful deity in the temple is made of wood or stone, one who sees a Vaishnav guru as an ordinary human being, or one who materially conceives of a Vaishnav as belonging to a particular caste, is Nataki, a resident of hell. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can appear before us in many forms as he likes. But we must know the true facts. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo viditat vataha. That's Bhagavad Gita 4.9. By following the instructions of sadhu, guru, and shastra, the saintly persons, the spiritual master, and the authoritative scriptures, one can understand Krishna. And then one makes his life successful by returning home back to Godhead. Om gana timananda shajananjana shalakaya chakshuna militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa gadamayam dadati swaparantikam. So the first point that Prabhupada makes here, actually Sukadeva Goswami makes, or Prabhupada, and the translation is that when Krishna transformed himself from the Vishnu form into the form of a small human child, he was transforming himself into his original form. Ete chamsa kala pumsa Krishnas tu Bhagavan swayam. Indirati vyakalam loke mridayanti yuge yuge. That stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, I think it's first canto, chapter 3, text 20 something, that this form of Krishna, you know, is a human form. That's his original form. It's not that the form of Krishna is a expansion of Vishnu. Krishna is not that. This is the verse that's quoted as evidence that Krishna is not an incarnation of Vishnu. It's the other way around. There's a song by Lochan Das Thakur, I'm not sure. He goes, Avatara, Avatari. That Krishna is not an avatar, he's the source of the avatars. So that's the first point that's being made here in the translation. Then in his purport, Prabhupada talks about, he quotes from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 6. He just quotes one line. The entire verse goes, Ajopi san aviyatma, bhutanam ishvaropi san, pakutim svamatistaya, sambhavami atmamaya. That Krishna says, although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and though I am the Lord of all sentient beings, every now and then I come in my own form. Why not? He could do it. So Krishna comes in his own form. That's what's being stated here. And he does that by his spiritual energy. And Prabhupada makes the point, he says, this is done by spiritual energy. Nothing is forced upon him by the material energy. This is the difference between the Lord and an ordinary living being. So, immediately the example that comes to mind, which Prabhupada used on very different occasions, is that of, like, say, President Obama visited a prison. Okay? So, he looks like everybody else, basically. And when he's in the prison, somebody might think, well, here he is. He's one of the prisoners. He's, under the rules of the laws of the prison now. Obama's in prison. See? But it's not like that. He's in a different category. He's the president. So when he goes to the prison, not only is he not under the laws or the rules of the prison, but because he's the president, the rules and the laws of the prison are under him. Of course, I don't know what degree it goes to here in America, but like the presidents can have what's called a presidential pardon, which sometimes they exercise just as they're going out of office. They might pardon some criminal that did some favors for them or something, like wound up getting thrown in jail. I think that was the case with Bush, and I forget the guy's name, Skippy something or whatever. But it's like that. It's the president is never under the rules of the prison system. It's the other way around. So it is for Krishna. Krishna's not under the law of material nature. The law of material nature is under Krishna's control. And just like in the case of, that example of the president, not only is, he's not a prisoner when he's in the prison, he can pardon a prisoner, I don't know exactly the full extent of his powers, but so in the same way, Krishna can just, he's not under the control of these material laws, but he can change them at a moment's notice. So that's an important point there. So then Prabhupada goes on to say here in the purport that non-believers say, how can the Supreme Controller descend as an ordinary human being? And he makes the point previous that ordinary people have difficulty accepting the Supreme Controller, God, as a human being because they forget that he can do everything by spiritual energy, Atmamaya. So I was thinking about this point, and I was thinking about how this would apply then, at the time when Krishna was actually present, and now. Well, then, 5,000 years ago, in one sense I was thinking, why should it have been such a difficult thing for people to accept? Because, like, for instance, when you read in Krishna book, this is off the top of my head, you have the pastime of Shalva. So at one point in that story, we know Shalva, he had that Vimana that was built for him by, I think it was Maya Danava, acted in a very mysterious way. So there's one point in that pastime when he used it to attack the city of Dwarka. He was trying to get revenge from on behalf of his friend Sisupal, who was killed by Krishna in the Rajasuya assembly by his Sudarshan Chakra. So he, that was a specific benediction. I think he got the benediction from Lord Shiva. And then Maya Danava was actually the person who was employed to build that Vimana. So anyway, so Sisupal was attacking. And at one point, in the story there, he was losing it by this point. He'd done kind of everything, thrown everything at him that he could, but between Prajumna and then I think Krishna actually appeared on the scene at some point, so he was realizing he was starting to lose in his attempt to destroy all of Dwarka and its inhabitants. So he resorted to some mystic tricks, and what he did basically was He all of a sudden, Krishna was there on the battlefield, and this messenger comes before Krishna and says, "Oh, Krishna, Shalva has captured your father, and he's about to kill him," like that. The messenger just kind of appeared out of nowhere. In a sense, that's the impression you get when you read the story. But Krishna took it as okay, yeah, that's. It's happening. And then the next thing, Shalva comes with out of his airplane, and he has a form of Vasudev, and he chops off his head right in front of Krishna and drags him away like that. And Krishna was, at least for the purpose of the pastime, at least he reacted like, "Oh, what's happened here? This is horrible." But the point is that so here's an ordinary demon, and he was able to exhibit those mystic powers. He either transformed or just created that messenger initially, and then he came looking like himself with a form of Vasudev. And these different even different demons have these mystic powers. So why would it be so difficult for people back at that time to accept that, here's Krishna coming at first as in a Vishnu form and then transforming himself into an ordinary human child? In other words, it wasn't such a far out thing back in those days. But I guess the reason is, and this was quoted by Rabindranath, I think on Saturday when he gave class, Avijananti mamudha manushim tanamashrita padam bhava majanato mamabhuta maheshvande. Fools deride me when I descend in my human form. It's due to their, not so much that those kind of things don't happen, but it's the atheistic mentality. They just, they just can't. They just can't accept, Krishna. It's not that those kind of things weren't happening, as I said, but it's more just that atheistic mentality that's preventing them from accepting that. And as far as, in modern times, okay, those kind of things don't happen today. But same thing, it's people's knowledge is Mayaya Pratigyana. In that seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that there's four kinds of people that don't surrender unto me. Namam duskritana mudha papajante naradama Mayaya Pratigyana asuram bhavam ashrita. And one of them is that their intelligence is stolen by illusion. So that's the that's the explanation, at least the explanation I would give why people today, couldn't accept this, because their intelligence is stolen by illusion. People's intelligence is stolen by illusion. Actually, if we analyze, this is what Jiva Goswami is making a proposition here. He says that unless we accept the energy of the Supreme Personality of God as inconceivable beyond the conception of our words and mind, we cannot understand the Supreme Lord. So that's not such an unreasonable proposition, to accept that the supreme being who has inconceivable energies beyond the conception of our words and mind. That's not so unreasonable, especially if you consider what the other proposals that are out there are. Okay, so here's one proposal, that there's a supreme being who has inconceivable energies beyond the conception of our words and mind. Okay, that's a proposal. Jiva Goswami is saying we should accept that. Okay, somebody might say, I can't accept that. That's ridiculous. That's absurd. That's outrageous. Okay? Well, but my dear sir, you're accepting something. Everybody's accepting some idea, you see? Just to analyze that a little bit. You know, just Prabhupada would always say, would quote the Vedic aphorism, palena padichite, they judge a process by the result. So in one sense, you could think of everything as a result. You know, like the way everybody is, the way we are individually, we're a result. So there's some process that led up to us being the way we are. Process means like a series of steps or actions, right? And they're based on something, a rationale. In other words, every living being is operating on the basis of some rationale. I actually looked up in the dictionary what that word meant. Rationale is a set of reasons or a logical basis for a course of action or a particular belief. An explanation of controlling principles of opinion, belief. Underlying reason, a basis. The reasons for a particular set of thoughts or actions. That idea. See, so every living being has got some rationale that's at the basis of their thinking. Well, that is their thinking and their actions. It's based on some rationale. So here Jiva Goswami is suggesting this: we accept this rationale, the rationale that there's a supreme being who has inconceivable energies beyond the conception of our words and mind. Okay? We might balk at that. But what rationale? Because you can't not have a rationale. There's no question of like, well, I don't have any rationale. I won't accept this rationale, and I won't accept the, you know, an atheistic rationale, but I'll just have... No, you can't have no rationale. You're accepting some rationale. So basically, the rationale that people are accepting today is that everything somehow or another just came out of nothing, you know, just popped out of nothing, okay? And it developed by some random process to what we're experiencing today. So that's a rationale. You know, that's an underlying reason or a basis or, you know, an explanation. So is that more believable? Is that more, believable or acceptable than what Jiva Goswami is presenting here? That that we have to accept the supreme being that has inconceivable energies? Not to my mind, you see. So it's actually a reasonable proposal. But as I mentioned, people today, Namam Duskritana Mudha Papajante Naradama Mayaya Pratigana. Unfortunately, people's intelligence is stolen by illusion. People's intelligence is stolen by illusion. And that's the actual reason why they feel more comfortable accepting a rationale, which is, you know, like everything comes out of nothing, and then by some random process it develops to what it is today, than what Jiva Goswami is suggesting. Okay? I think I might have read this in a previous class, but this is just a couple sentences from a book that was written by Sariputta back in the late 70s. It's called Vedic Cosmography and Astronomy. And, he's just sort of in, it's in a couple, like a very brief argument in support of this idea that we should accept, you know, what Jiva Goswami is proposing here, that the Supreme Lord has inconceivable energies. He says, it's reasonable to follow the example of the Acharyas. Well, he's making the point that, you know, that in the Vedic literatures there might be a lot of different bits information that seem very bewildering from a gross sensory perspective. So how do we relate to that? How do we deal with that? So he makes this point. He says, it's reasonable to follow the example of the Acharyas and simply receive these statements with faith, which is what's being suggested here by Jiva Goswami. If this is done, then further insight may come in due course of time. In contrast, the approach of skeptical rejection is not likely to lead to further study and insight. Okay? So it's kind of reasonable. That sounds pretty reasonable to me, that you just initially you accept the the statements of the Vedic literatures with faith, following in the footsteps of the Acharyas, and in hope that further insight may come in due course of time. And that's our philosophy, that, how's it go? Ado shvadha tato sadhu sangha tata bhajana kriya tata. There's that, Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion, he gives the process how things develop. It starts with faith, but then from faith you associate with the spiritually elevated devotees and you get engaged in devotional service. You start practicing devotional service and hopefully you'll, work through these different stages. Anartha Nivritti, Nishta, you become steady in devotional service. Ruchi, you get a taste for chanting and hearing, and then Shakti, and then Bhava, then Prem. So in other words, it's not like for your whole entire career in Krishna consciousness, you just have to just go, well, I accept it. I accept it in faith. And no. As you engage in the process and you get purified and you become elevated, then that faith transforms into an experience. And you actually start having some, as you advance, it's possible, to have like direct experience about how these statements, which you were initially accepting on faith, are actually true, by direct experience. Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam sushukam kartam avyam. Krishna says, chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita, that, how he's talking about how devotional service is the king of knowledge, it's the king of education. It's everlasting, it's joyfully performed. But one of the things he says, it gives direct perception of the self by realization. So it's not like, forever and ever, you're just kind of blindly accepting, well, I accept. No, if we're fortunate enough to become advanced devotees, then it's possible. The possibility is that we can have some direct realization of these statements, that are being made, like what we were hearing today, etc. So that's there. And and even just breaking it down to like a common mundane understanding, aside from like shastric statements, it's not so outrageous to, that somebody has energies that they can, and by expanding their energies and manipulating their energies, they can do some wonderful things. I was, in preparation for the class, I was just remembering something somebody showed me a few years ago. They showed me like a video of the home of Bill Gates, right? And, I was just thinking, well, here, there's so many different types of energy, but one energy, especially here in the material world, is money, right? So he's got a lot of that. They say his net worth is $80 billion. So that says he's got a lot of that energy. And one way in which he's used that energy is he has a home on Lake Washington up in Seattle. That's, if you got to visit it, you would experience some pretty incredible things. They have it's done in such a way that when guests come, they get a pin, an actual hard copy kind of pin, and that pin can be programmed with all your personal preferences. So that, in other words, when you go into the home, the temperature, as you walk from one room to the other, the temperature adjusts itself. The lighting adjusts itself according to your personal preference, which is on your little, electronic device there that you got. The music adjusts itself, and there's like screens like that all around the room, and the decor adjusts itself. So you're just walking through there, so that's his energy. He's made that all happen through his energy. So, if this is an ordinary human being, if somebody from like some very simple part, living very simply in some very agrarian type of situation in the world came in, they would think this is totally miraculous. Actually, we would probably think it was totally miraculous if we had the opportunity to go through that. But it's just an expansion of his energy. He's got, he's able to do that. And it's an ordinary person, an ordinary human being. What to speak of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Another example would be, take an expert pianist. Actually, Mukunda Maharaj had this experience. It's described in the Lilamrita. He was, this was back when all the devotees first went to England. They were staying at Tittenhurst, which was the mansion of John Lennon, the estate. of John Lennon. So at one point, I believe it was Mukunda Maharaj, he was in the house, the main part of the house, and John Lennon was sitting behind the piano, and he just started playing on the piano. And it was, you know, it was Mukunda Maharaj, he was describing how he was like a musical genius, and he was able to, you know, very easily go from one musical idiom to another. And it was like he went from blues to classical to folk to rock, you know, to jazz. And he just, you know, it was effortlessly. He just knew the piano so well, knew music so well that he was just able to, you know, just go from one to the other seamlessly, effortlessly like that. So, you know, so in the same way, Krishna can manipulate his energies like that. You know, he's like, you know, the different keys on the keyboard, so to speak, the notes, you know, are like you could say in this analogy, his energies, and he just knows how to play them. He can, you know, make anything come out. Just like this, John Lennon was able to kind of, Mukunda Maharaj was convinced he could make any kind of music come out of that thing, you know, because he's so expert. So in the same way, Krishna can make any kind of thing come out of this energy, material or spiritual, which, you know, for him it's all spiritual energy, but he's totally in control of that. So it shouldn't be so difficult for people to at least theoretically accept that this could possibly be the way things have, you know, started, you know, the origin of everything and the explanation for how things are working. And once again, it's not an unreasonable proposal, especially when you consider the alternatives. When you consider the alternatives of, you know, that are available to people today. I mean, actually, most people never really sit down at any point in their life, I don't think, and sit down and think, okay, what are the ideas that I'm going to base my life on? I don't think this, you know, for most of us, most people don't do that. They just kind of like inherit them. Just like, you know, when somebody dies, you sometimes inherit some property or some money or something like that. Well, even before that, when you're born, you're inheriting. You're inheriting like a whole worldview, whether you know it or not, you know, and you get it. Sometimes you might get it like by being, might be articulated to you, you know, verbally or explained to you by your parents, but quite often not. You just pick it up, you know, through the way other people behave, and you know, you could just kind of figure it out. What's the right things to think, the wrong things to think, the right things to do, the wrong things to do. So, you know, there's no point in time in which people sit down and go, well, what are the ideas I really want to base my life upon? But if they did, they might be able to see that actually I'm following sort of a worldview that really is contradicted, what to speak of, by, you know, things that some Shastra says or, you know, religious authorities, but even by empiric evidence. Like, I'll give you an example of that. Okay, so for the last 50 years, there's been, you know, some scientists who've done research about children who remember their past lives. Okay? So, it's controversial, but if that's the case, you know, if that's actually the case, then people who are thinking that, you know, who are following like a very mainstream, mechanistic, reductionist kind of scientific worldview, that's contradicted. You know, that's contradicted by that. And if you're thinking, if you're living in a such a way that if you trace it back, you can understand that, well, the basis of, you know, the basic rationale behind the way I'm living is that when you're born, that's the beginning, and when you die, that's the end, right? Then, okay, that's contradicted by this evidence. Similarly, if you're living according to, if you trace back and you can understand your basic rationale, it is that, okay, when you're born, that's the beginning, but when you die, you either go to heaven or hell. Well, that's contradicted, once again, by this information. See? But, you know, people, they won't even be aware of that, what to speak of, consider that. See? So, basically, what I'm saying is that what we're presenting here, this statement here that, you know, it's reasonable to follow the example of the Acharyas, receive these statements with faith. If this is done, further insight may come in due course. Whereas, in contrast, the approach of skeptical rejection is not likely to lead to further study or insight. That's a very reasonable proposal. All things considered, that's a very reasonable proposal, you know, of how to, a way in which to conduct your life. Because, you know, if you carefully consider what that's saying, it's reasonable. And especially if you consider the alternatives, you know, then it's a very reasonable thing. So anyway, I guess I'll stop there. I didn't, you know, it's 20 past 8, so I'm kind of out of time. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah. Mila.
I was thinking about, you know, when you were talking about how John Lennon was manipulating the keyboard, I was thinking about, like, you know, one or two examples of artists, how you take
it looks real, you know, to you. Or even like a video game program or a director, they put together, everybody knows that movies are, you know, they're fictitious. They're made by actors and directors, but they can weave together things so well that you forget that there's a cameraman that's filming this, and you completely forget that. So in that way, I was seeing...
Yeah, same idea. Those are ordinary human beings, what to speak of, what, you know, what Krishna can do when he puts his mind to it, so to speak. Anybody else? Any comments or questions? Okay, thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Ki Jai.